return of all parties to the 2015 nuclear deal to their commitments is an important and leading principle in future negotiations. Major U.S. stock indexes fall after consumer inflation hits a 30-year high, mainly blamed on disrupted supply chains. Also ahead, the World Health Organization says Europe is the only region in the world that is witnessing a rise in coronavirus cases and deaths. News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story this hour, Iran says the return of all parties to the 2015 nuclear deal to their commitments is an important and leading principle in future negotiations. Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian also says Tehran is ready to deliver a good agreement at the negotiating table in Vienna. That's where Iran and the remaining signatories to the nuclear accord have held several rounds of talks this year to revive the troubled deal. They are set to resume negotiations aimed at removing U.S. sanctions on November the 29th. Amir Abdollahian says Iran's chief negotiator, Ali Bagheri Kani, is currently engaged in what he calls successful talks in Europe. Bagheri Kani is on a tour to France, Germany, and Britain. The commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has urged all Iraqi sides to respect the results of last month's parliamentary elections. According to the Iranian ambassador to Baghdad, Brigadier General Ismail Qa'ani issued the call in a meeting with top Iraqi officials. Qa'ani declared Iran's support for the final outcome of the vote, which is yet to be announced officially. He also called on the Iraqi authorities to address the complaints about the election process within the frame of law. The Iranian ambassador told Iranian media that the top Iranian general also called for Iraq's unity and condemned a recent drone attack on the residence of the Iraqi prime minister. Several Central Asian nations have held security talks in the Indian capital, New Delhi. As Panao Zaman reports, the talks are aimed at addressing relevant security challenges in Afghanistan and its impact on the neighboring countries.
New Delhi hosted a third regional summit to discuss the ongoing situation in neighboring Afghanistan following the recent pullout of U.S. and NATO forces from the country. The conference was chaired by India's National Security Advisor Ajit Doval and his counterparts from other Central Asian nations. India's National Security Advisor opened the dialogue.
We all have been keenly watching the developments in that country. These have important implications not only for the people of Afghanistan but also for its neighbors and the region. This is the time for close consultations amongst us, greater cooperation and interaction, and coordination among the regional countries.
Top security officials reiterated pledge to work for ensuring safe Afghanistan and what they called free of safe haven for global terrorism. The delegates also called for formation of inclusive government in Kabul, stressing the territory should not be used for sheltering, training, planning or financing terror activities.
This could perhaps be the first time Central Asian countries are coming together on a single platform to not only discuss their role in rebuilding war-ravaged Afghanistan, but also formulate a collective strategies which could promote peace, stability and security in the region.
Issues related to radicalization, extremism, separatism and drug trafficking in the region were also discussed in the meeting. The officials expressed deep concern about the sufferings Afghan people have endured before and after the U.S. fallout. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, stressed on rebuilding inclusive Afghanistan, saying U.S. policies brought nothing but miseries and devastation in the region.
Afghanistan's neighbors need to fulfill its duties to settle the crisis unfolding in the country, including efforts to hold to account the countries behind the current situation there, establish an inclusive government comprised of all ethnicities there, and tackle the humanitarian crisis gripping the war-torn country. The Islamic Republic of Iran is ready to rebuild Afghanistan. Regional partners should also exert pressure on the United States to unblock the financial resources of the oppressed nation.
Security chiefs from Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Russia, Tajikistan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan also attended the talks. However, neighboring China and Pakistan did not attend the forum, citing scheduling reasons. The first two editions of the event were held in Iran in September 2018 and December 2019. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Turning elsewhere, Wall Street has closed sharply lower after official data showed that the inflation rate in the United States has hit a 30-year high. All three major U.S. stock indexes have suffered losses, with the tech-rich Nasdaq dropping by 1.7%. The slump comes as official data indicates an increase of over 6 percentage points in the consumer price index compared to last year. High demand from consumers with spare cash plus a shortage of workers and disrupted supply chains have pushed prices higher. President Joe Biden has acknowledged that inflation is hurting Americans and that controlling it is a top priority for his administration. Biden has argued that his $1.2 trillion infrastructure plan can help bring down the costs. Opponents of the plan believe such a spending spree would accelerate the rising inflation rate. Europe is battling spikes in coronavirus infections, with many countries in the continent reporting upticks in cases and fatalities. The World Health Organization says coronavirus deaths have risen by 10% in Europe over the past week. The WHO says Europe is the only world region where both cases and deaths are steadily increasing. In Germany, a top virologist has warned that a further 100,000 people may die from COVID if nothing is done to contain the virus. Germany registered its highest rate of infection on Wednesday since the pandemic began, with almost 40,000 cases in a day. France says that the surge in cases means that the country is now at the beginning of a fifth wave of the coronavirus. The UN rights chief has voiced concern over the migrant crisis in Europe as thousands of asylum seekers remain stranded at the border between Belarus and Poland in desperate conditions. Michelle Bachelet described as intolerable the situation of asylum seekers, calling for a resolution to the crisis. She said the migrants should not be prevented from seeking asylum under international law. And the European Union is criticized for triggering the crisis as its member Poland has deployed guards and police forces to block the people in search of a better life. Russia has also blamed the EU for the chaos, urging the bloc to act responsibly.
The situation is indeed very tense, and there is a tendency to the escalation of the tensions that cause our concern. It is apparent that a humanitarian catastrophe is looming against the background of Europeans' reluctance to demonstrate commitment to their European values.
The Russian Foreign Ministry has also separately asked the EU not to use the migrant crisis as a pretext to impose fresh sanctions on Minsk. Earlier, Belarus said that the EU is causing the crisis itself and wants to shift the blame on the country to justify its new sanctions. Now, there has been mounting concern about the lives of six hunger-striking Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, as two of them suffer from serious health conditions. According to the relatives of Ella Arej, he is at high risk of losing his eyesight due to weeks of starvation. Another prisoner, Miqdad al-Hawasmi, is also in hospital after his health condition worsened. Both inmates have been on hunger strike for 95 and 112 days respectively. Meanwhile, al-Hawasmi's mother says her son is protesting peacefully against his unlawful detention, but the Israeli regime wants to kill him and other hunger striking prisoners in any way. All the six prisoners are protesting against Israel's so-called administrative detention policy and want an end to their indefinite imprisonment without charge or trial. Human rights and international organizations have warned that the health conditions of the six prisoners are worsening rapidly. Meanwhile, Palestinians Palestinian factions in the besieged the Gaza Strip have held a rally to condemn the so-called framework agreements between UNRWA and the United States. The agreements undermines UNRWA's vital work for Palestinian refugees in West Asia and violates the UN agency's core principles, including neutrality and independence. Ashraf Shannon has more in this report.
Palestinian factions in the blockaded Gaza Strip protested in front of the UNRWA office against aid cuts and demanded the agency scrap the so-called framework agreement with the United States. The framework agreement signed last July is a two-year working plan between the U.S. State Department and UNRWA. The protest comes less than a week ahead of the International Conference on UNRWA that will be held in Brussels under the chairmanship of Jordan and Sweden. Hamas movement said the agreement exposes Palestinian refugees to grave dangers.
We call on donor countries to provide UNRWA with all necessary funding and alleviate the suffering of millions of Palestinian refugees. We also maintain that the framework agreement will place UNRWA under the U.S. hegemony and undermine the Palestinian refugees' right of return to the land of their ancestors.
The UN agency provides education, health, and welfare services to millions of Palestinian refugees in Al-Quds, the occupied West Bank, the Gaza Strip, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. During a press conference, Palestinian factions slammed the silence of the international community over the plight of Palestinian refugees.
Settler colonialist regimes that helped Zionist gangs occupy Palestine and displace its people in 1948 must stop helping the Israeli regime. Upon the creation of the illegitimate Zionist entity, those gangs destroyed over 500 Palestinian towns and villages and committed dozens of massacres against the indigenous Palestinian population.
UNRWA has long been a priority target for the Israeli regime and its allies. Over the past decades, the Israeli regime had been campaigning to defund UNRWA and end its mandate.
The so-called framework agreements between the United States and UNRWA aims to cancel the rights of Palestinian refugees. Palestinians across the political spectrum denounce the agreement. The U.S. wants to turn the UNRWA into a security agency in the occupied territories.
Experts say the so-called framework agreement with UNRWA is an attempt by the United States to delegitimize and depoliticize the issue of Palestinian refugees. UNRWA is the UN agency responsible for the welfare of millions of Palestinian refugees in West Asia who were displaced and dispossessed upon the creation of the Israeli regime. Ashraf Shannon, Gaza.
Now, the U.S. Secretary of State has threatened that Washington and its allies will be prepared to take action if China attacks Taiwan. Anthony Blinken has not specified what sort of action the U.S. is ready to take, but he says the role of the U.S. is to make sure that Taiwan has the means to defend itself. The top U.S. diplomat has warned that any unilateral action to use force to disrupt Taiwan's status quo will be seen as a significant threat to peace and security. China views the island as part of its territory and has time and again warned the U.S. against any action that would undermine its sovereignty. On Tuesday, China blasted the U.S. after a group of American congressmen visited Taiwan. A special envoy of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation is visiting Pakistan and the disputed Kashmir region to get first-hand accounts of the situation there. The visit comes as tensions between Pakistan and India persist over Kashmir. Kamran Yusuf has the details from Islamabad.
Since February, there has been calm at the line of control, a de facto border that divides Kashmir between India and Pakistan. But despite relative peace at the border, the situation in the Indian-administered Kashmir is precarious. There have been daily reports of human rights abuses.
The people of the occupied territory continue to suffer under India's brutal military siege. Extrajudicial killings, arbitrary arrests, and detention of Kashmiri youth, harassment, and custodial torture continue with impunity, while fundamental freedoms are suspended and Hurriyat leadership remains incarcerated.
Against this backdrop, a special envoy of the 57-member Organization of Islamic Cooperation, or OIC, is visiting Pakistan. His visit is aimed at getting the first-hand account of the ground situation of the disputed territory. The special envoy met Prime Minister Imran Khan, who briefed him about the current situation in the Indian-administered Kashmir. But the public opinion is divided over the role of OIC on Kashmir.
I feel OIC has played no significant role in the resolution of the Kashmir dispute. The OIC has not pursued the issue at the international level.
Major problem in Pakistan.
Kashmir is a major problem between the two countries. Except for passing a few resolutions, the OIC has not done enough for the Kashmir cause. It should play a more proactive role.
In an official statement, the OIC special envoy expressed Islamic world's abiding solidarity and support to the legitimate Kashmiri struggle for their right to self-determination as enshrined in the relevant UN Security Council resolutions. Kashmir is at the heart of tensions between India and Pakistan for over 7 decades. Both countries claim the region in full, but rule only parts of it. While Pakistan has granted access to the OIC special envoy to its part of Kashmir, India has barred international delegations from visiting its part of Kashmir. This, Pakistan says, highlights Indian effort to hide human rights abuses in the disputed region. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
Sudan's main civilian political coalition has rejected any negotiation with the military that assumed power last month in a coup led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. The Forces of Freedom and Change says it will not accept the return of Burhan in the head of state position he held before the October 25 coup. The coalition has voiced support for Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok, who is now under house arrest. The coup was the culmination of tensions between Sudan's civilian and military rulers since the overthrow of President Omar al-Bashir in 2019. So far, at least 14 people have been killed and 300 others wounded in the anti-coup protests. And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
The defeat in Afghanistan offers a chance to rethink America's war machine, but Congress is on the verge of raising military spending to $740 billion. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Peter Moss, a journalist. This article is published under the heading, After Afghanistan Disaster, the Pentagon is on track to get even more money. Stay tuned for the second part of this article, please. Biden chose as his defense secretary a board member of Raytheon, retired General Lloyd Austin, who received a payout of up to $1.7 million when he left the company. Austin was also a member of defense contractor Booz Allen Hamilton's National Security Advisory Board, for which he was paid $200,000 in the year before he became defense secretary. The revolving door was operational during the Trump administration, too. President Donald Trump's last confirmed defense secretary, Mark Esper, was a senior lobbyist for Raytheon before joining the cabinet. The company paid him more than $1.5 million in his final year. The door continues to spin. Just last month, the Pentagon's head of foreign military sales, Heidi Grant, left her government job and a day later started her new one as Boeing's vice president for business development. The closeness of the industry and the government to the point of being indistinguishable at times was even referenced in a conference last month between investors and the chief executive of Raytheon, one of the largest weapons producers in the U.S. Defense spending is nonpartisan, noted Gregory Hayes, the Raytheon CEO, whose compensation exceeded $20 million last year. We are encouraged to see Congress supporting plus-ups to the president's budget that are also aligned to our business and our investments, he said. This is a story about a reckoning that gets mugged every time it ventures into daylight. A year ago, a group of House Democrats led by Lee and Representative Mark Pocan banded together to support an amendment to cut U.S. military spending by 10%. There were only 96 of them, so their amendment didn't come close to passing. But it was the start of what progressives knew would be an incremental effort to narrow the distance between military spending and common sense. Things seemed to look better this year. The upstarts had created the Defense Spending Reduction Caucus and sent a letter to Biden in March to remind him that if the Pentagon's budget was cut by 10%, it would still be larger than the next 10 largest militaries combined, and most of those are the U.S. allies. They argued that a clear lesson could be learned from the so-called War on Terror, which not only cost trillions of dollars, but also took the lives of more than 7,000 U.S. troops and at least hundreds of thousands of Iraqi and Afghan civilians. The letter stated the premise of a military-centric foreign policy is a failure. On September 22nd, the $740 billion budget, which had been approved by the Armed Services Committee, arrived for a vote on the House floor, where there was a short debate on the amendment to reduce it by 10%. Representative Mike Rogers cited China and warned of catastrophic effects on the training and readiness if there were any cuts. His remark drew a sharp response from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, DNY, who said it wasn't the military's readiness that was threatened, but the profit margins of defense contractors. The amendment got only 86 votes, all from Democrats, which was fewer than the 93 votes it got a year earlier, before the humiliation in Afghanistan. There were several reasons it fared worse, including the fact that this year the Pentagon budget came from a Democratic rather than Republican administration. Some Democrats were willing to reduce the budget only if the other party was asking for an increase. Additionally, an amendment was offered this year to cut just $25 billion plus up, and this less radical proposal got 142 votes, which wasn't enough to pass, but was more than the budget-reducing amendment got. It appears to have functioned as an easy way for Democrats to signal their slight concern about military spending without going against their president or seeking a true reduction. $740 billion budget with strong support from both parties. The budget is now in the hands of the full Senate, which is expected to vote on it soon. Despite the failure in Afghanistan, there seems little likelihood that U.S. military spending will slow down.
Food for thought. Hello everyone, and let us reflect on a wonderful maxim from Imam Hassan Askari, peace be upon him, the 11th infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The wine drinker is like an idolater, for his disobedience of God.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Power of Truth. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the power of truth. That if someone is on the truth, what power does the truth have? And we should always be towards the truth. We should leave our personal desires. We should leave the fear that we have from the community. Because if there is something which is truth, we should strike for it always. And it is the truth that basically leads us towards the success. We have seen there are many people who left the truth and they were known as hypocrites, or they were known as bad people. No one has given attention to their wordings. They have no value in the society. Yes, they might have good money. They might have wealth. They might have, you know, the things that are in this world. but there is no status. There is nothing in hereafter. Even in the eyes of people, they do not have any kind of love or any respect in the eyes of people. So we need to be very much careful when we are talking about the truth, that the only thing that can take us towards the success is the power of the truth, and we must be on the side of truth. Maybe my friend has done a mistake, and I love my friend, but still, the justice tells me, the justice teaches me to be with the truth. And even if it is my brother or sister or my friend, I should be very much careful while dealing, because the justice talks about the truth.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is farstoday.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the power of truth. In the history, there is a story that once the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ, he went to Taif for preaching Islam. And Taif was a place where the rich polytheists used to live. Therefore, when he went there, no one has heard him, and even they did not allow him to enter the Taif. Rather, they threw stones on him. Therefore, he got injured and he left the place without saying even a single word. Later, he went to a place where there was a garden, and he sat at the shadow of one of the trees. Now, this garden was from Utbah and Shaybah. They were two polytheists. And when they saw Prophet injured and there was a bleeding from his leg and his body, they got happy. And then they send one of their servants, who was a Christian, towards the Prophet with the plate of grapes. And they said to him, do not talk to him. You should not talk to him. Just give him this plate and come back. Let's see what he does. So when the servant took that plate of grapes towards the Prophet, he said to Prophet that they are for you. So eat them. The Prophet ﷺ picked a grape from the bunch and said, Bismillah. The servant had never heard anybody in Taif who used to use the same or similar phrase before eating. Therefore, he asked him, why you use this? And the Prophet said, it looks like you're not from Taif. Who are you? He said, I'm a Christian and I live at this place. And then Prophet said to him that I am the Prophet of God. The way Yunus, who was from the same place where you belong to, was the Prophet of God, and he was my brother. So Shaybah and Utbah, they noticed that their bondsman was totally engrossed in conversation. They grew with anger, and they did not want anyone to communicate with the Prophet. Therefore, the truth that was in the Prophet, which he was taking towards the people to preach them, it turned a Christian into Muslim. It turns people to be inclined towards him. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
capital is once again the scene of a mesmerizing annual life festival. This year's Fjord Oslo Life Festival started on Friday and will run until Sunday. Numerous artists have had the opportunity to showcase their dazzling designs by lighting up important buildings in the Norwegian capital. This year's biggest installation is called The Abyss, which was inspired by animals living in the deep ocean. Modern technology has changed our lives in countless ways, with robots now preparing to lend a hand in operation rooms. Surgical robots are on display at the 4th China International Import Expo. One of the machines, dubbed Mesa X, gives assistance in spinal surgery. Employing the robot can lessen bleeding by 50% compared to open surgeries. Another one assists doctors to perform interventional surgeries.
Guide valves in the vessels can be controlled even less than 1 millimeter. This is not cannot be achieved by the human hands. With the great, I think, market impact from this showcase, we successfully performed a first case PCI in Hainan Boao on March 13th.
The producers say surgical robots will soon operate in more hospitals around China. Therefore, training centers have been established to help surgeons learn how to operate the new generation of surgical robots.
Tigress belonging to the endangered Bengal species has given birth to 4 cubs at the Mexican Zoo, bringing joy and hope to wildlife enthusiasts. The 4 were born in the San Jorge Park in the city of Ciudad Juarez on October 10th. Nearly a month on, they are in good health. That is good news, because usually when multiple cubs are born, not all of them survive. Zoo officials have not yet determined the sex of the newborn cubs. That is because their mother lets out a roar when the vets are nearby. Bengal tigers are endangered for 2 reasons: poaching and the destruction of their natural habitat. Here's what you can call killing 2 birds with 1 stone. Classic car lovers have gone on an exciting rally to see an erupting volcano. The event, organized by Beshbuk Rallies, happened on a Saturday. Motorists taking part in the vintage rally had the unique opportunity to witness a volcano erupting ash and smoke. Most of the participants tried to get as close as they could to the volcano, but there were also those who chose to take other vehicles because they were afraid that their precious antique cars would be damaged.
Workers digging gas pipes in the Peruvian capital Lima have discovered a cemetery dating back 2 millennia. Archaeologists have recovered 6 bodies, including those of children. All of them were buried in a seated position. The site also yielded about 40 burial vessels. The findings are thought to belong to the culture known as White on Red, which settled on the central coast of Peru centuries ago during the pre-Hispanic era.
Often it does not take much to bring about positive social change. In Johannesburg, a group of painters are creating artworks on the trolleys of street recyclers. Reason? To encourage bystanders to look up and notice the work recyclers, locally known as reclaimers, do in the community.
I like my work to have meaning, so when I get to paint and become a part of a project like this, it's great for me, you know? Because it's not every day we get to like do stuff like this, so yeah.
Up until now, they were just filthy-looking jumbo bags with recyclable waste wheeling along the streets. But thanks to graffiti artists who are giving them a makeover with bold and bright designs to help identify and protect the recyclers. artists say their goal is to build a relationship between neighborhood residents and waste pickers. The reclaimers roam around the city day and night, with some motorists even considering them a risk, as the trolleys are not always visible. There are some 6,000 reclaimers in Johannesburg who make a living collecting, sorting, recycling garbage. It's a messy job, but they do it anyway. A group of women are joining hands to protect one of India's key natural sites that is also on UNESCO's heritage list, the Western Ghats, a mountain chain that's facing severe deforestation. The 27 members of this all-female task force are doing all they can to protect the area's rare ferns, mosses, and thousands of other plants. They're using a variety of gardening tools and techniques to preserve species from all over the mountains. Not only that, but they also make artificial conditions and habitats for endangered species from other parts of the world, mainly those affected by climate change. One of the conservationists explained that what they are doing is actually helping the forest regenerate.
We have witnessed the birth of a forest, and that's a very powerful thing. You know, the mind is filled with the ghastly stories of forests being cut, like the Amazon or like the Western Ghats, but here we're witness to the birth of forests as well, and that is the forest itself birthing itself, you see.
The Western Ghats Mountains are home to nearly 5,000 species of flowering plants, but many of them are globally threatened. Only less than half of the area's flora is currently under conservation. Scientists say the outlook for the mountain is very concerning. Carbon dioxide is one of the causes of global warming, but can we get rid of it to save our planet? A Swiss firm has come up with a novel idea to store CO2 underground and turn it into rocks. Company Climeworks has started operating the world's largest direct air carbon capture and storage plant called Okra in Iceland. Located in Hershey, Okra is entirely run on renewable energy. It soaks carbon dioxide directly from the air and buries it as rocks deep underground to be mineralized. Usually, a natural process takes hundreds of thousands of years to turn the gas into basaltic rocks, but here it takes up to 2 years for the CO2 to turn into white crystals.
Once the carbon dioxide is captured, it will be dissolved in water, and here we are at the injection site. The carbon dioxide dissolved in water will come through this pipe into the well, where it will be injected into the volcanic rock at a depth of between 800 meters and 2 kilometers.
The plant is said to be removing 4,000 tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere each year. The amount is too little to save the planet from carbon emissions, as climate modeling suggests the world needs to eliminate several billion tons per year by 2050. Here we have to take into account the saying of the head of Orca that we have to learn to walk before we can run.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Legends never die. So 1 year after his death, Argentinians are remembering their hero on his birthday. And that's no one but that legendary football player, Diego Maradona. It would have been Maradona's 61st birthday this year. People all around the country, including in the capital, Buenos Aires, remembered their iconic figure in ceremonies over the weekend. In the city of Rosario, a giant monument was inaugurated in honor of the football star. You can see on your screens fans gathering there in celebration. They say Maradona's love still runs in the veins of Argentinians. Amsterdam, the capital of the Netherlands, is riddled with waterways through which thousands of boats pass each day. Soon, the city may also be hosting self-driving vessels. Amsterdam's Institute for Advanced Metropolitan Solutions has devised an autonomous boat that can cross the city's busy canals without the help of a conductor. The watercraft, named a rowboat, is the size of a small car. The developers intend to use the boats for tasks ranging from transporting people to collecting trash. They think it can also be used for less conventional purposes, like preventing oil spills or forming a temporary bridge. Amsterdam's authorities are considering locations for a trash collection pilot project starting early next year. Disastrous effects of climate change has been the loss of glaciers worldwide. People around the world are trying new ways to tackle this problem. Now, a team of Chilean conservationists have come up with a creative project to protect glaciers and prevent water loss. The project is called Nilus. Winter rains are collected in cone-like structures called stupas. Experts from Chile are using a technology that was first developed in India to make these man-made glaciers. The water is then later used in the dry summer months. Chile has been experiencing a severe drought for years. Nilus director Enrique Gilona says the project hopes to address water shortages in the country.
Here we are not creating new water. Water is something that is in nature already. It has a cycle, but clearly it has been affected by the effects of the great climate change, which we are facing. And we are looking for a solution that actually allows us to protect this water for a longer time in the mountain range, to be able to deliver it downstream toward the communities.
The goal is to store some 100 million liters of water across 50 stupas next year. This would be enough water to supply 100,000 people for 3 months. The first prototype was erected in Park Arenas, an area known for its glaciers surrounding the volcano, the highest parts of the mountain region. Researchers and activists have warned that glaciers in the Andes Mountains have been receding in recent years. They blame climate change for the loss of glaciers and water shortages. A photo on social media, an article, or a TV program can all draw attention to climate change. But to a German artist, nothing seems to be as effective as a journey using a giant wire ball to make his voice heard. Arndt Drossel started his journey from his hometown Paderborn, West Germany, 3 months ago. The trip has so far taken him through more than 60 cities. He has completed the journey to the Scottish city of Glasgow, the venue of a major UN climate conference. Drossel says he aims to tell people how they can help tackle climate change, now a key global problem. The German artist believes everyone has a duty to solve the problem to help next generations have a good future.
My wife and we have 5 children, and we want to give them a good and happy future. And everybody knows, I think, about the problems our Earth has, and we will have the same problem in several cities and countries.
The German artist says he has encouraged people to make specific promises to tackle climate change. He says his own pledge was to offset all his personal carbon emissions by using the sphere for his journey. Drossel says he will continue his efforts until the promises reach a million.
mission is to raise awareness of climate change in a 500-kilometer pilgrimage to Glasgow. The 3-meter polar bear is work of British furniture maker Bamber Hoss. The bear weighs 17 kilograms and is made of bamboo, willow, and tissue paper. Hoss started his journey with Clarion from his hometown of Bishop's Castle in England to Glasgow. They accomplished their spectacular journey ahead of the United Nations COP26 climate conference in the Scottish city. Hoss says Clarion is a symbol of melting Arctic ice caps due to global warming.
He's called Clarion. Clarion the bear is not a bear. He is a metaphor. He's a symbol. It is a very obvious symbol that a polar bear represents the Arctic, not the Antarctic, and that is where, you know, some of the problems are with melting ice caps. Not all the problems, because they're elsewhere as well.
Hoss says his aim is to encourage people to pay attention to climate change. Environmental activists from across the UK and elsewhere on the continent have also embarked on a long journey on foot to reach the UN Climate Change Conference in Glasgow.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In Tuesday, 2nd of November's election, Republicans served notice that the clock is ticking on Democrats' slim majorities in Congress. On Friday, 5th of November, 13 House Republicans delivered the decisive votes to rescue a key part of President Biden's agenda, an agenda endangered by those in his own party. The article you're about to hear has been written by Aaron Blake, a senior political reporter writing for the Washington Post. The piece is titled, GOP Erupts Over Its House Members Bailing Out Biden. Tuesday, 2nd of November's election, Republicans served notice that the clock is ticking on Democrats' slim majorities in Congress. On Friday, 5th of November, 13 House Republicans delivered the decisive votes to rescue a key part of President Joe Biden's agenda, an agenda endangered by those in his own party. Ensued the bloodletting. Biden's $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill passed late on Friday night and is headed for his signature after months of intense wrangling over the details, particularly whether it will be tied to a larger spending plan that progressives insisted upon passing alongside it. But in the end, it wasn't really those progressives who provided the key votes, but rather the 13 Republicans. The final vote count was 228 to 206, meaning if no Republicans had voted for the bill, it wouldn't have passed. and some Republicans are predictably furious, with undersold questions about House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's future leadership of the party potentially in the offing. I can't believe Republicans just gave the Democrats their socialism bill, Representative Matt Gaetz, a Republican from Florida, tweeted. That 13 House Republicans provided the votes needed to pass this is absurd, Representative Chip Roy, a Republican from Texas, tweeted. Others threatened before the vote to target or launch primaries against the defectors in their midst. Vote for this infrastructure bill and I will primary the hell out of you, Representative Madison Cawthorn, a Republican from North Carolina, said shortly before the vote. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican from Georgia, in her typically understated fashion, warned last week that any Republicans who voted for the bill would be a traitor to our party, a traitor to their voters, and a traitor to our donors. After the vote, she accused the 13 Republicans of having voted to pass Joe Biden's communist takeover of America, and tweeted the phone numbers of their congressional officers. That would see such rhetoric from this particular, more extreme wing of the Republican Party isn't all that surprising, nor is it terribly surprising that at least some Republicans would vote for the bill. When it passed in the Senate, 19 Republicans voted for it, including Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky. Many saw it as an olive branch amid a Democratic push to eliminate the filibuster in the Senate, an obstruction tactic that doesn't apply in the House of Representatives. Last Friday's GOP defections were even more significant than during the last Trump impeachment, when 10 Republicans voted to impeach the former president, a historically high number. And the fact that on Friday, 5th of November, they provided the votes necessary for passage makes this even more fraught. They were also more significant than many, including Kevin McCarthy, suggested they might be. While McCarthy previously kept his powder dry on whipping against the bill, he ultimately pushed for his members to vote against it. As recently as last week, Kevin McCarthy said, "I don't expect few, if any, to vote for it if it comes to the floor today." In another interview, he was asked about the infrastructure bill and said, "It will fail." Circumstances change, but the defections from Kevin McCarthy's party line were significant for the modern era. They also notably included Representative Nicole Malliotakis, a Republican from New York, who had been made part of the team led by Minority Whip Steve Scalise, Republican from Louisiana, just earlier this year, the same whipping operation that failed on Friday. Nicole Malliotakis comes from a region which stood to benefit more than others from the bill, and accounted for many of the GOP yes votes. Six of the 13 defectors came from New York and New Jersey. But that one in particular has to sting. We knew at least a few Republicans would vote yes, and others were seemingly freed up to vote for the bill once it was headed for passage. But 10 Republicans voted for the bill rather quickly, and the eventual total number of defections gave the bill more than just a veneer of bipartisanship, especially when combined with a Senate vote. The National Review summed it up accordingly. Disgraceful House Republicans rescue Joe Biden's failing agenda. 13 Republicans swooped in to rescue Nancy.